puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Here we are on another Sunday morning, time to welcome Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society for another edition of Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Bruce.
So you've just come back from northern Manitoba, have you?
I have. In fact, I've been there twice in the past 3 weeks. Both trips were to York Factory, and I thought listeners might enjoy hearing about my experiences.
Of course. How does someone get to York Factory, first of all?
Well, it's not easy. If you have the budget, you could charter a float plane or a helicopter, and that'll get you there quickly, but not inexpensively, and I'm on a budget, so no, that's not for me. But I think a more rewarding way is by land and water. So for both of my trips, in fact, I brought a group of travelers, many of whom, by the way, are listeners to Abandon Manitoba.
Right.
On this journey, we drove from Winnipeg to Thompson. In fact, we stopped along the way at a variety of interesting sites that I thought and knew about. Then we continued on to Gillam on a road that, well, let's just say it really tested our patience as well as our vehicles. And then from Gillam, we drove to a boat launch immediately downstream of the limestone generating station. And from there, we traveled by boat down the Nelson River, out onto Hudson Bay, and back into the Hayes River to York Factory. The boat portion alone is over 160 kilometers. The full trip from Winnipeg is roughly 1,200 kilometers. And you certainly want to have a good, reliable vehicle because, well, we did have a few problems along the way.
What happened?
Well, on our most recent trip, we paused at the now vacant construction camp for the Kiask Generating Station. I had been to it when it was in operation. I thought I'd just like to see. It looks like it's still intact. And in fact, it is. As one of the trucks in our convoy pulled up behind me, though, its driver hopped out and discovered one of his tires was completely flat. And it had gone flat almost instantly. And so he said, oh, well, no problem. I've got a spare. So, okay, we stop. We, you know, lift up the truck, put on the spare, can bring it back down, and away we go. We hadn't been 5 minutes, and he stopped again. The spare was now flat.
Oh, my.
Well, of course, most people don't bring two spare tires. In fact, often the case, you don't even have one spare tire. So we had to leave the truck on the side of the road. And we took one of the flats with us, and we squeezed the passengers from the truck. Of course, none of the vehicles had lots of room, but we had to squeeze like sardines into the remaining vehicles. So it wasn't exactly a comfortable ride there to all the way to Limestone. And while we were at York Factory, well, one of those flats was replaced. So on the way home, we swapped it out and everybody could spread out again and was somewhat comfortable. So, yeah.
It's kind of a pain in the rear, it sounds like.
A little
but,
bit. Little
you
bit.
Enjoy that kind of thing anyway.
Adventure. If long yes. as nobody dies, then it's a good story afterwards.
Because you've been to York Factory several times now, right?
Right. I've been there 5 times so far. And in fact, I'm heading back again next week. And I'm taking a film crew with me. We're going to shoot another video for the Manitoba Historical Society's YouTube channel. I love the place, and I simply want more people to see it.
What does it look like today?
Well, York Factory sits on the north shore of the Hayes River, about 10 kilometers inland from Hudson Bay. At its height, the site held about 50 buildings and housed hundreds of people. They say maybe even over 1,000 people at its height. Today, well, there's only 3 buildings remaining, and one of them, a powder magazine, is in ruin. You know, that stone structure was built between 1838 and 1840, stored gunpowder, and of course, they wanted it far away from all the other buildings so that if there was any explosion, it wouldn't devastate the whole rest. The other 2 buildings, well, there is the depot building, which is really, to my mind, the focus of the visit, and a little building behind it called the library. There is today a seasonal staff of 2, well, sometimes 3 people, and they maintain the site for visitors in July and August. In other words, it's not a year-round facility. It's really only open for 2 months. And so we arrived in our boat at high tide, and that's necessary because otherwise the boat's going to hit rocks along the way. We stayed overnight in 2 bunkhouses, and we left again at high tide the next day. So we were there just about 24 hours.
And you've often said that York Factory is in jeopardy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, unfortunately, the riverbank in front of the depot building is eroding at an alarming rate. One of the numbers we heard cited while we were there was 3 to 5 feet of shoreline is lost every year. In other words, the shoreline recedes backwards 3 to 5 feet. That's amazing. So at that pace, the depot building is going to be undercut and it's going to collapse into the Hayes River within the next century. And in fact, if it accelerates, it could even be sooner than that. Now, geotechnical engineers have proposed a solution. I mean, there's always an engineering solution for most of these things, but it carries a multi-million dollar price tag. Parks Canada, which operates the site, I think they're a little reluctant to invest that amount, given that fewer than 200 visitors reach York Factory each year. So, you know, just cost-benefit analysis, you know, if they have money to spend on Banff as opposed to York Factory, well, they're probably going to put it where all the people are. In fact, on our trips, several of our travelers had deep family ties to the site. You know, for example, one man's great-grandfather had managed York Factory in the 1930s, and he had all kinds of neat family photos to show us of what it looked like back then. On the most recent trip, one of the women on the trip was the great-great-great, I think I got enough greats in there, granddaughter of Chief Trader William Sinclair. And he died at York Factory in 1818. Well, he's buried in that cemetery, and actually we photographed her beside his gravestone.
Was that the first time she'd been?
It was, and that, in fact, what motivated her to want to go. She wanted to see the grave, and it was very moving, you know, to see someone connect with their roots in that way.
Yeah, so many generations in mm-hmm. the past. And you've been there a lot. Did you learn anything new in your recent visits?
You know, you'd think if I'd been there 5 times, I would have learned everything there was to learn. But no, I actually did learn some really interesting stuff. So, for instance, I've described the depot building as the oldest wooden building in Manitoba.
Yeah.
And possibly all of Western Canada. But this time, I took a closer look at that little library building that stands nearby. It once housed York Factory's accountants before it became a library in 1856. There is interpretive signage at York Factory that dates that little building to 1825. And if that date is accurate, that makes the building at least 6 years older than the depot, and therefore a contender for that oldest title. But I also noticed something really cool inside the depot building. There are literally scores of historic signatures covering the interior walls. You know, fur traders would write their signature on the wall. And especially a lot of them up in a little cupola. It's a little sort of a 360-degree sort of observation little place right at the very top of the building. You get a commanding view from the surrounding area. Well, I was up there, and I spotted a familiar name. Former Manitoba Premier and later Court of Appeal Court Justice Sterling Lyon. Now, at first I wasn't sure it was the right guy. I mean, there aren't that many Sterling Lyons,
no,
but I thought,
so. Well,
who knows? The signature actually had a date below it, the 13th of August, 1965. So when I got back, I did some digging and, well, it was interesting.
What'd you find?
Well, it turns out that Sterling Lyon had visited York Factory in 1965, and at the time he was serving as Manitoba's Minister of Mines and Natural Resources, and he had accompanied Premier Duff Roblin, of course Duff Roblin was the Premier in 1965, on a trip to assess whether any of the remaining buildings there should be preserved as a provincial historic site. In other words, the government was wavering, you know, should we take this place on? You know, the fact is that the Hudson's Bay Company had abandoned the site in 1957, 8 years earlier, and I guess there was just sitting vacant, and a number of levels of government were thinking, oh, somebody should do something. So those guys came, and they had a look, and I guess Sterling Lyon climbed up into the cupola and signed his signature. And so now that I know this, I really want to go back and check to see if I can find Duff Roblin's signature, too.
Oh, interesting. So what was the decision on preserving it?
Well, they passed.
Okay.
3 years later, though, 1968, ownership of York Factory was transferred to the federal government, and it became a National Historic Site, which it remains today. And I think this does make sense, you know, given its significance not just to Manitoba, but literally for all of Western Canada and arguably all of Canada. And, you know, I've said before that, you know, history just seems to ooze from the walls of the depot building. So on both of my visits this summer, I climbed to the second floor. I found a nice chair in a quiet corner, and I just listened. And the building has these creaks and murmurs. You know, any old building has noise. And, it, you know, it was so easy to just fantasize that I had been transported back. You know, I was imagining the bustle of the workers that were hauling trade goods in and out of it. for more than 125 years, and I really felt like I'd just been transported back.
You're really into that kind of stuff, too.
Oh, I love it.
The history of it all. Sounds like you had a great trip.
Absolutely. You know, and what made it especially special was that the people who traveled with me were just such fine folks. You know, they handled the insects, the rain, the mud. Yes, there was all of those things, like seasoned adventurers. And, well, I also have to commend Clint and Grizz of Nelson River Adventures. They were the fellows that got us there and brought us back safely. You know, they were, as always, outstanding. And, in fact, one of the real highlights was the barbecued burgers we had at supper and then the breakfast the next morning. Just a perfect capstone to an unforgettable trip. And I do hope to return to York Factory again next summer. So if listeners want updates as the plans develop, you know, email me, Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N, at mhs.mb.ca. I'll add you to our list and I'll keep you updated and maybe you'll see it for yourself next summer.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and predict that Grizz is a nickname.
It is indeed. His real name is Wayne.
Okay, there you go. Shout out to Grizz and Clint from Nelson River Adventures. Well, thanks for that, Gordon. Tell us what's coming up next week.
Well, during our boat rides to York Factory, I had two opportunities to stop and see Port Nelson, an abandoned seaport on Hudson Bay. Among the thousands of places I've visited in my travels, it may be my all-time favorite. So I'm going to talk about what I saw at Port Nelson next week. So for now, all I'm going to say is, wow.
Well, that's high praise from you in one word. So we'll hear about that next week.
We will. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in mind.